The weekend is near, and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
At worst, there were fears we mightn't see another AFL game in 2020. But as the COVID-19 numbers decrease overall in this country, there's a light at the end of a very dark tunnel for the footy world. And that light seems closer than ever. So with the AFL season perhaps less than 1 month away from rebooting, what better way to break it all down than to get the old Fox Footy podcast crew together to give you the lay of the land. Ben Waterworth with you for this special edition of the Fox Footy podcast, and joining me all the way from sunny South Yarra, is Max Lawton. Hello, Maxie.
Hello, Ben. It's a pleasure to virtually be with you. I can see you've been practicing your intros since the pandemic began.
I've been wanting to get away an intro for quite some time. It's been a bit too long. And fresh off a brutal high-intensity interval session at Como Park in Caulfield is Tom Morris. Hello, Thomas.
Yeah, Caulfield Park in Caulfield. But thanks, Benny. Thanks, Max. It's good to be here. I feel like it's sort of a reunion of sorts. I'm trying to think of a good example. Maybe, I don't know, Michael Jordan coming back to the Chicago Bulls is topical, and that's what it feels like at the moment.
Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. But in reality, like many people around the country and around the world at the moment, we're talking every day, but we haven't seen each other probably for a good couple of months now.
I saw you two weeks ago, Benny.
Yeah, I came in to get a flu shot at the Fox Footy offices, which was worthwhile doing. But
a non-compulsory flu shot,
all above board.
It's just feeling like we're in the last couple of days in particular. It feels like we will be together again soon. As reflective as that sounds, it feels like, Thomas, we are going to be together again soon, because we'll be having some footy to discuss from an on-field perspective.
It looks that way. You don't want to get ahead of yourself, but it seems as if football is 3 to 4 weeks away. You'd say maybe 5 weeks away at the most. Clubs coming back to train is great. And then the AFL soon announcing a return to play plan is even better. It's just such a complex web of varying factors that the AFL needs to weigh up and has been weighing up for a number of times. I mean, the amount of times we've seen hubs will happen, hubs won't happen, the back and forth has been incredible. Just because there's been so many different stakeholders that the AFL's had to satisfy, Max, the broadcasters, the players, the clubs. But the hardest stakeholder or influencer to satisfy is clearly the state governments, because they're not beholden to the game. And that's where the AFL has hit a little bit of a snag in recent weeks, just because in essence, the state governments, they care about sport. They know it's important for culture and society, but it's not their government. It's not their business. And that's what's made it difficult for Gillon McLachlan to navigate.
Yeah, and they may have an interest from an economic point of view, but even then, it's not like fans are attending games once the footy season starts. So they don't care too much. And then the AFL has the extra problem of being too big, of being too expansive as compared to the NRL, which has to deal with New Zealand for the Warriors, but only had to deal with really New South Wales and Queensland and, you know, Victoria for the Storm. But we have to deal with 5 states at once for to get them all on the same page. And as you've seen from Monday and Tuesday, when the Victorian government has really opened things up, but the AFL still doesn't want to take that step forward, we've got to wait for everyone to be on the same page, unless you can get some of the teams to agree to keep some of their players in quarantine, in isolation, which is this really weird little Vic Bias argument coming back around.
You've unpacked a few things there, Maxie, but I suppose one thing that I want to start off with is looking at the AFL v NRL and how the two organisations have handled and approached this wanting to come back from the COVID-19 pandemic. Peter Volandis has polarised so many people in his determination to get back and the season going on May 28. And from the looks of things, it looks like he's going to be back on May 28. But now the AFL mightn't be too far behind that. In fact, maybe less than a fortnight after that May 28 date. But it's just been fascinating to see how the two organisations have gone about their business over recent months.
I think the NRL has, in the end, been proven correct. I mean, we'll have to completely wait and see for when football comes back. But they've had a bulldog approach to an issue that you really shouldn't be having a bulldog approach to. You should be relaxed and measured and balanced in the way that you and informed in the way that you assess it. But the NRL has sort of said, well, this is the date we're going to be back. Let's make it happen. Where the AFL, I think, initially said, well, we've got a number of boxes we need to tick before we get back there. There was also the financial component of those two businesses, Max. The NRL is in a bit more of a precarious position than the AFL, but it looks as if we're going to have both football codes, main football codes, back by mid-June, and June 18 at the latest, which is an incredible situation given where we were probably 4 to 6 weeks ago when we thought it might be back in July, it might even be back in August. I had a senior club official tell me 2 months ago, 6 weeks ago, I reckon it was, that he doesn't reckon football will come back at all this year. It's going to be a write-off for a season. And that was a view, probably wasn't widespread, but it was certainly emanating throughout the clubs and throughout the industry not long ago.
Well, it's almost as if you have to have two extremes on this. You either try and come back almost as soon as you can or as soon as it's safe, which is what the NRL certainly is doing and the AFL has more cautiously gotten to, or you just don't do it at all until we know, okay, we can have normality, a vaccine is here, everyone's going to be completely safe. And the reality of business means that the NRL and AFL weren't going to do the latter. So they were always going to try and come back as soon as realistically possible. And I think they're doing it in a safe enough way. They're going to have enough of these policies around how they come back that it's going to be safe enough for the players that it's a reasonable decision.
Ben, I'm intrigued how the AFL and the NRL, maybe to a lesser extent, we are a Fox Footy podcast, but I'm also interested to see how that code goes. If something goes wrong, how will these codes hold their nerve? And more specifically, how will the CEOs of both businesses, Gillon McLachlan's done a terrific job and the NRL's had a bit of upheaval at the top, but how will they hold their nerve if there's a spike or if a couple of players test positive or a coach test positive? And then what happens if one of those players or a coach or an official's on a ventilator and is looking in you know, their life is in grave danger? How does the entire organization and the industry hold their nerve? And I would assume that when they put the default system in place to return to play, they would have to cover off all these possibilities to make sure that nothing surprises them. But it's still not going to make it any easier, because there will be, when society opens up gradually, as we've seen already, there will be incremental spikes. That's just the reality of the situation. And then it's how the sporting organisations deal with the competing interests of sport versus health. And that's a really, really difficult one, given that they are a sport business, but they are beholden to health as well.
Someone's going to get it. That's just the reality. Someone in the AFL will end up getting coronavirus. It's just impossible, once things open up, for everyone to avoid it for the next 12 months until there's a vaccine.
And then on the other hand, you've got an interesting report from Caroline Wilson last night about the coaches at the moment feel like the AFL is more worried about players getting COVID than players getting injuries. And there's this reportedly some hesitancy from the coaches that not enough thought, at least, is not being put into how trying to avoid players coming back from injuries, which is obviously a coach's mindset. But from a coaching perspective, Tom, there's a lot of hesitancy around trying to get their respective playing groups up for the rebooted season at the moment.
There's a lot of, I don't know how to say it, it's probably muted angst or muted disquiet around club land, just because everyone's looking after themselves. Understandably, clubs are hemorrhaging money because there's members calling up looking for refunds and there's no games going ahead, so their revenue's down and sponsors are speaking to them and staff members have been stood down. So even though everyone's saying it's an industry-wide approach, and I'm sure on a broad perspective it is an industry-wide approach, each element of the industry is absolutely looking after their own quarter, because that's what you need to do in order to keep pushing forward and keep your jobs. And I find that really difficult to believe when I hear people say everyone's working together, everything's okay. No, there are little spot fires all around the industry all the time. And we've seen a few spill over into the media. We've seen Eddie McGuire. We've seen the AFL Players Association. We've seen the AFL itself. There's been spot fires that we've witnessed, but I'm sure there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, just because it's uncharted territory for everyone.
And it's just a matter of risk management, because players are going to get injured, but it's better that, realistically, better that someone does their knee than gets coronavirus. It's safer. So,
well, yeah, it's not life-threatening, isn't it?
No, exactly. So they have to weigh up these things. And also, it could be career-threatening, and that's a financial blow, but they're weighing up the blows of not playing games for another month or two, because they want to give everyone a full preseason. But then that's a huge economic problem for the AFL and for the media and everyone surrounding the AFL. And they have to weigh all of those things up at once.
But when we put it, when we all narrow it down, what this time has really exposed in is the AFL's greatest flaw is that there is a serious Victorian bias, Max, right now.
Oh, we've known it. We've known it for years.
Do you think it's legit, Max?
I think when you have a competition that was the VFL and a majority of its teams are in one state and the league is based in one state, mostly in one city, yes. Geelong is not Melbourne, as Geelong people will tell you. Naturally, there are going to be advantages to Victorian teams. Of course, there is Vic bias in those ways. Of course, Victorian teams have it easier in many ways, like Richmond getting 8 games at the MCG to end the home and away season last year. But of course, there are things going the other way. It is an advantage when you are a non-Victorian club and you have more games with true home ground advantage each season because teams are coming from interstate. It is probably a bigger disadvantage to have to fly 11 times a year or 10 times. But this is the reality of the AFL. There is no way to perfectly equalise the AFL given its imbalance from its basis.
And there's no way to perfectly equalise it now as well, because as Tom mentioned off the top, the hardest stakeholder to try and get on the same page at the moment is all the state governments, because they're all going in, all have different limitations at the moment. And that will probably affect how the start of the season, this rebooted season, will look, Tom. And a lot of that has sort of been based around the two WA teams in particular, and to a lesser extent, or maybe the same extent soon, the South Australian teams and where they might be playing their games, because the fly-in, fly-out model that was heavily reported on and favoured on probably, you know, just under 2 weeks ago, there's a little bit of doubt over that now.
Yeah, there massively is. I can't see how the season starts if the Western Australian government doesn't do one of two things, either relax their current restrictions or allow the AFL forces Freo or West Coast to move into state for a period of time. They're the only two ways the season can start again. And I can't see the WA government, who enjoy flexing their muscles a little bit, as most governments do when they're in power, especially in times of crisis when they're getting a lot of airtime. I'm not saying this is a negative. This is just the reality that most politicians, Max, actually increase their, what do you call it, electability and likability in times of crisis, because they're shown to be powerful and they're shown to be influential. If you just go through each of the states or each of the five states involved in footy quickly, WA and South Australia have rules whereby if you go in there, you've got to quarantine for 14 days, which is affecting the AFL system now. Queensland, they don't have those regulations so long as you're a resident. So you can go in to the Gold Coast or Brisbane and anywhere in Queensland and just and live like a normal person immediately. But their lockdown laws or their restrictions of 10 people in a group, they don't get lifted till I think Saturday morning or Friday night. New South Wales is a similar timeline to that, but that's really the sort of the epicenter, if there is one, of coronavirus. And then Victoria, well, we've seen yesterday that Dan Andrews has lifted the regulations for tonight, 11:59 p.m. So every state has slightly different rules. And it reminds me, if I can go a bit off topic, of a West Wing scene where Jed Bartlett is in a debate and he's asked about the difference between California and the USA. And his retort, and this is just after his tie gets cut by his...
great scene.
And he gets asked about the difference between California and the USA. And I can't remember his exact words, but he says, there are times when we are one country and there are times when we are 50 states. And I know this because California didn't fight the Germans in World War II. And this is exactly the same here, obviously on a completely different level, because the Australian government is giving an overarching framework whereby we can get back to work and get back to living our lives, but they are leaving it up to the jurisdictions and the states to work out the logistics behind each state government's plans. And that's a really difficult task. I don't know how the AFL can get it perfectly in sync with that, even on a good day. And this is a very bad day.
No, it's a return to pre-1901 Federation days, basically.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a week that goes past in the Fox Footy office where Tom doesn't pull out a West Ring reference. So I'm really glad that he's brought it out.
I thought of one yesterday as well, when it was splashed all over social media that Scott Morrison would be holding a press conference about the bushfires at 11 o'clock at exactly the same time as Victorian Premier Dan Andrews. And it made me think of Arnie Vinnick's talk until you drop press conference to take over the airwaves when he was running for president against Santos. Yeah, Santos. Anyway, the West Wing's brilliant, and we also must say before we move on a cultural reference, we our best wishes and condolences go out to one of the great characters of all time, Frank Costanza or Jerry Stiller. What an amazing actor he was. 90, I think he was 90 or 92, and he. I don't know about you guys, but he defined the childhood. Serenity Now.
I've been waiting for Tom's view on Jerry Stiller, so this has worked well.
We've got so much to cover aside from football. I know we go off on a tangent a little bit, but we haven't spoken for a while.
So it's probably on that good note, probably time to bring in Australia's favourite segment on the Fox Footy podcast. Tom has brought in Fair or Farce.
Ooh, here
wait,
we go.
We don't have the bumpers, do we?
Fair or farce? Very simple, broad one to start. I'll go to you first, Max. Fair or farce? The AFL has done an excellent job in this time of crisis.
Fair. I think from the start, people have been praising Gil McLaughlin's handling of things. And we're being, as a league, more cautious than the NRL, which I think most people would appreciate. And as I said, there are business realities about when the league needs to come back to make money. And I'm pretty thrilled as a fan with how things have gone so far. I don't have too many complaints. There are little bits and pieces where you can complain, obviously, but it's more about things that the AFL might stuff up in a non-pandemic, like the Crows punishments situation. Yeah. So that's obviously a different topic.
So out of 10, what would you rate their handling situation so far?
Eight and a half.
Ben?
Yeah, no, I was thinking eight as well. Yeah, I think for considering of the different stakeholders that they're dealing with, the extra states, I think they've done a really good job.
And if you listen to this and you think that we're just AFL puppets or AFL mouthpieces, just stay tuned for the Adelaide Crows assessment. Ben, fair or farce, canned applause would be good for the game upon its resumption.
What would be good for the game?
Canned applause. So like canned laughter, except canned applause. So fake crowd noise.
No, farce. What's the point in dressing it up? Because I think it would make it look worse. And I reckon Maxie would probably agree with me in this situation as well. Is that putting on fake laughter as well just sort of makes it almost a bit gimmicky for mine. I don't think it would add anything. In fact, I think it would probably be a distraction from the product. People are just crying out to actually see some on-field action. Adding in fake applause and cheers just would be a distraction for mine.
Yeah, to be honest, I actually disagree. I found by the end of round one that the eeriness of the silence was too much. It took me away. It distracted me. So I don't want a complete huge soundtrack of cheers and stuff, but an undercurrent of some crowd noise, just something to take away that biting nature of the silence wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for me. And maybe this is because I've watched wrestling for years and they love fake crowd noise. That's only distracting when they use the same cheer 10 times an episode.
The thing is, though, with wrestling, though, is that you've actually got fans normally in the building. When you actually put that crowd noise and there's actually no one in the stands, like if that just visually, and then you put the sound with it, it would just be such a weird combination for mine. And that... I don't know. Just me personally, that would be distracting for mine.
Yeah. Yes. But what? So let's make this a wrestling podcast. What they actually have done in wrestling, there's two schools of thought here. WWE has kept stands empty, of course, as you're supposed to do. Where there's another company, AEW, which has had about like 10 people in the crowd, just wrestlers who aren't in the matches. And they've actually really enhanced their product because they've had any noise at all. There is a big difference between just a little bit of noise and none.
I was watching the K-League the other night. Korean soccer, just because there's nothing else to watch. And they have fake crowd noise. And it got me thinking about it. But the difference in soccer is that the soccer culture, or the football, the round ball culture, if you will, is for constant noise throughout matches, almost like an Indian IPL cricket game, people banging drums and dancing and singing the entire 90 minutes. Whereas in footy, that's not the culture. You hear ball, and then it's quiet, then a bit of another roar, then it's quiet, and then someone kicks a goal, and there's a roar. Yeah. So it would seem weird, but I don't know. I'm in the middle of you two. I'd like to see it trialed and see how it goes. Max, fair or farce? Tom Sheridan of the Lockdown League and also GWS Giants should get a job in marketing and PR for footy following his Oscar Allen stunt.
He certainly fair in the sense that he's found a way to draw attention to himself. And if the idea is controversy creates cash, as Eric Bischoff once wrote in his book title, then yes, he's done a fantastic job. This whole Oscar Allen thing where it came out with videos saying that the Eagles have been training in groups of 10 and then everyone got in a furor on social media, and then it was revealed that for some reason they pre-recorded an interview 2 weeks before it was actually broadcast. He's done a great job. I'm not sure how much money they're going to make with the Lockdown League, which is, of course, AFL players playing the FIFA soccer video game online. But he certainly found a way to draw attention to himself, and that's impressive in its own way.
I think if there was 5 people around Australia yesterday that said, I've never heard of the Lockdown League, what's the Lockdown League? Then that's a win for Tom Sheridan. Isn't that what PR is, to get it out there? But I've got to say as well, I don't think you'd mind. I called him yesterday and I said, he's a good friend of one of my friends. And I called him and I said, Tom, give us the lowdown. When was this filmed? He said, mate, I've got to say, this is unbelievable. And he told me when it was filmed and when it was done. So I, you know, did the story. And then he said before he hung up, just give the Lockdown League a bit of a pump up. So I did. I said quarterfinals Friday night, Oscar Allen's involved, so tune in.
Do you have some sympathy, Tom, for Oscar Allen, for how that's all played out?
Yeah, I do. I do, absolutely. I mean, there was a 48-hour window where West Coast and Freo players were legally allowed to train in groups of 10 and the AFL hadn't yet outlawed the practice. So it was in that window that he not only trained in a group of 10 with teammates, but also said that he trained in a group of 10. So it was a pretty small gap. And I think it sort of tells us a bit about where footy's at the moment, with not too many news stories going around, that became quite big. But in fairness, you know, there's been a lot of unbelievable things that have happened in this time off. I mean, the Adelaide Crows thing is probably top of that pile. So you've got to sort of investigate it until you can disprove it. And that's what journalists did yesterday. Well,
yeah. So if we just cover briefly how that came out, because so that I first saw it on Reddit, and then there were some people on Twitter who were really trying to spread that video around saying, hey, why is this not a furor? The Crows are getting pillared from pillar to post about all this stuff. Pilloried, I think, is the actual word I meant there. But the Eagles weren't. And then so it was a story that the AFL was investigating, correct? That was the initial
story.
That is a story if the AFL is investigating something.
That's
right. And then we found out the reality.
Yeah, that's right. People, as I've said on this podcast several times, people love to talk about Vic bias. I like a lot of non-Victorian clubs more than I like Victorian clubs. I'd never even thought of Vic bias before people started telling me that they were biased. I mean, people, it's like confirmation bias. You say something good about Essendon, you're biased. You say something good about the Crow, something good about something negative about Essendon is because you're trying to take down a big club. You actually can't win sometimes. Ben, is it Ben's go? Yes, it is
there, Tom.
Fair or fast? Would get sick of footy if it was on every night of the week. Fair or fast?
I want to say fast because we're pretty desperate for it at the moment and because we actually can't go to games as well. So I'm going to say fast in that situation. Having said that, though, from I can't, in these kind of situations, it's hard not to get out of a work mindset and think, oh, we've got to cover a game every single day. Yeah. And that's going to be pretty, because for a fan perspective, they have the option of you know, tuning in or out. And that would probably happen during a normal, regular home and away season, because a lot of fans have probably only watched their own team. That's, I suppose, the crux of how a lot of AFL footy is consumed. But we know that there are fans out there who love their team, but love consuming all AFL and love the issues or dislike the issues and want to have their say about it. For mine, I don't think we'll get sick of it just because that we've, you know, not only that we've only had the one round, like it's essentially we've had such a long preseason now. When you consider that we haven't had, you know, regular games since September last year, and we've only had the one round and plus a preseason competition, I think we'd be crying out for some footy. And if that's every day when it resumes, I think we'd love it.
Doesn't seem like that's going to happen now, though, does it?
Maybe not every night of the week. I think there'll be some weeks where we have it maybe 4 to 6 nights of the week.
If there are hubs, though, Tom, is it more likely to happen?
Yeah, and one thing we need to get ahead around as well is that some clubs will play 3 or 4 games while other clubs play 2 games, and then in the end, the season will end up, you've played 1,700 away games each, but it's not going to necessarily be perfectly linear. Max, Fair or fast? COVID-19 has given politicians a once-in-a-career opportunity to flex and get bulk screen time. And I'm going to say politicians. I mean politicians, but also our very good friend, Gillon McLachlan.
Fair. As you mentioned earlier, leadership is what comes to the fore in these situations. And it takes, how should I put this, a very self-absorbed type of leader who makes decisions on the fly to squander the opportunity to gain approval ratings during a crisis. There are certain global leaders that have done that and are still unpopular, but almost every premier in Australia is now incredibly popular to degrees that you would never see at any other point. So, yes, there's no point squandering a political crisis, as they say.
Yeah, I think that's probably a reasonable response, Maximilian. As per usual, you're very balanced and not too politically left or right.
Who could I have been referring to, Tom? It's impossible to tell.
I don't know. I don't think anyone would be able to work out whether you're deep right or deep left on the political spectrum. Ben, fair or fast?
Yes, Tom.
It's good that big lists have finally slowed down in the media. Fair or fast?
Good that big lists have finally slowed down. Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think there was probably a little bit of list fatigue after a while because there are a certain amount of lists. When Dermot Burton went on Fox Footy Live recently and did the top six lists of lists that he'd seen in the past few weeks, I thought, yeah, we've probably hit a bit of a hurdle here. Having said that, there have been some cracking lists over the past couple of months. In particular, Tom, I really enjoyed the one that we worked on together, which was your club's greatest cult figure since 2000.
Yes.
There were some crackers.
Well, defining a cult figure is a bit of it's subjective, isn't it? But what you find is, even though there's some subjective people in there and there's some comments that came back saying, well, what about this guy? What about this guy? But there's a core group of cult figures since 2000 that are indisputable, and the fans love them. And not because they're great players, just because their status in the game was so robust.
Talent was optional.
That's it.
I have to say, as much as I've enjoyed many of the lists and there is a need for media to create content during this time, I never want to think about any old football game or player ever again after this.
I disagree. I don't think you can get enough of nostalgic content.
I'm nostalgic out for now at the very least.
Yeah. All right, fair or fast? Last one. Is it Max now? Fair or fast? Yes. Isolation has made you appreciate sport and other things you took for granted more. Fair or fast?
Oh, well, fair. I literally have not been in a building other than my apartment since round one. Is the intensity of the isolation I've needed to be in due to my the nature of my body. It's been difficult, and it's been difficult for everyone, and we've had some tough times, but I think everyone will appreciate visiting family once that opens up on Wednesday night. I'm looking forward to seeing my grandfather, and everyone's going to have some emotional moments and some important moments in their lives and decisions about what they do on a day-to-day basis and how they go about things, and this may end up being for the best because of that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's time to reflect and understand what's important. And there's no doubt footy is, but we also know that more. I'm sort of going against what I've just said. I can't get used to the fact that Saturdays and Sundays feel the same as Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Yes.
It sort of just rolls in. It doesn't really matter what day it is. It sort of just rolls into the others. There's minimal differences.
It reminds me, Tom, of that time between Christmas and New Year when you don't know what the day is.
Yeah, well, yeah, you just know what the date is. You're right. Yeah, that's a great call. It's day three of the test match. Yeah,
exactly. That's all that matters. Well said, Maxie. Yeah. And a very nice edition of Fair or Fast from you, Thomas. You sort of flagged it beforehand about the whole Adelaide situation, Tom, and it's sort of over the past sort of two or three years, you and Adelaide have gone in the same sentence quite a fair bit. So interested to get your take on the Adelaide training breach and the Barossa Valley fiasco, which has seen 18 players cop one-game bracket suspended bans, and Ben Hart, an assistant coach, stood down for 6 weeks. This is a messy situation that has a lot of pundits still scratching their heads, thinking there's a few gaps of information.
Well, there are. I think the biggest gap is, did the Adelaide Crows receive clear permission from the South Australian government to train in groups of two outdoors. And we're yet to get a firm answer on that. What we know is the Adelaide Crows said they received permission, but then the South Australian Police Commissioner, according to a report in The Age, said that they only received permission to stay in their rooms or stay in isolation for that time. Stay indoors, I think it was. So there's a lot of unanswered questions, but I've got to say, as poorly as the Adelaide Crows handled this, they've actually been trumped. The AFL has said, hold my beer, because punishing them like this in the way that they've done, despite briefing media behind the scenes for the last 4 or 5 days that they were, and I'm happy to use the word furious. The AFL was furious, despite saying to everyone how angry and furious they were, despite Gillon McLachlan last Thursday negotiating with the South Australian Premier about a fly-in, fly-out model, and that being put on the back burner because of the Crows players, despite the CEO of the AFL, Gillon McLachlan, telling the coaches last Thursday that any breach of restrictions could lead to a season-ending ban. Despite all of these things, they'd come down with effectively nothing. Ben Hart, although it's 6 weeks, he'll be back by the next round of the footy season. He'll be back early in the season. And I don't think there'll be too much reputational damage here. I think people understand that Ben Hart was sort of the fall guy. The players, who surely have brains of their own, even though they're 1 to 3 years into their career, most of them didn't cop anything. They're not going to be suspended at all, even though it's a suspended sentence. And then the club didn't even cop a $1 fine. There's no draft picks. There's no games lost. It's just a baffling situation. To me, it's a paradox, because you have the AFL telling people how furious they are, and then the AFL 4 days later coming out and saying they're actually not furious. Well, which one is it? So no matter how bad the Adelaide Crows have handled the situation, which was an administrative error, it must be said, it was a miscommunication, an administrative error. There's still a few questions left. I think the AFL has trumped them. I think they've done a terrible job in this.
So there's sort of two questions for mine out of this. One is, how much of an advantage could the Crows have possibly gotten from what they did? And the details of what they did, right, are they were doing a two-hour session, and then at one point they split into groups of eight, and eight of them ended up kicking the footy around on a golf course, correct? And this is for about 10 minutes?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the exact time length.
I think that was in the AFL press release from memory. So this is a brief advantage. And I suppose my question is, could that really matter? Are they going to win an extra game because of that 10 minutes of kick to kick? I suppose that's not the point. The point is more that they're breaching the rules at all, right?
I think the AFL needed to set in stone what the rules were, and it was pretty clear cut that you guys know, it doesn't matter who you are, until the restrictions are eased, you can't go and kick the footy with 3 or 4 or 6 other people at the park. And players would have known this as well. And you might say the common sense resolution would be to say, hey guys, come on, you can't do that. That's okay. I mean, it's not going to give you an advantage to win a game. There's no real competitive advantage there. But then what happens invariably with these sorts of things is it reaches a threshold where you have to punish it. So you're actually better off just drawing a line in the sand and saying, if you go over this line, you're in real trouble. Just stay on the right side of it. There's also health concerns as well, because what would happen if they the reason you can't kick the footy in groups of more than two is because the virus can be transmitted via the sharing that you're kicking. So I know what you're saying, and I know that you agree with me, you're playing the devil's advocate, but I just think it needs to be strong, and the AFL had a chance to be strong, and they said they were going to be strong, but then they weren't strong, and I think it was weak.
Rival clubs disgusted at the moment, Tom, which was suggested on Monday night about the lenient punishments that have been handed out?
I haven't had anyone say to me that in those words they're disgusted. I think rival clubs that I've spoken to, and I've only spoken to two or three about this, were shocked and a bit frustrated by the whole thing. But I don't think there's as much bad. I think everyone understands. Well, the clubs I spoke to understand that the Adelaide Crows got it wrong. They also understand that it was an accident, an inadvertent, but it's pretty inexcusable. I mean, just because you're not trying to do the wrong thing doesn't mean you shouldn't be punished for doing the wrong thing. And I think that's what this comes down to.
Is it possible that the Crows are going to end up being punished anyway because they did something, and because of all this stuff that we've talked about, of the AFL was talking with the government at the time about a fly-in, fly-out model. And now, because the Crows infringed on that And because those discussions have sort of fell through, and because South Australia and West Australia are going to be strict on these border policies, that those teams get punished by having to base themselves on the East Coast, by having to play more away games, and they're going to end up getting a bigger punishment than a fine would have been anyway?
Maybe, but it's impossible to tell at the moment. As I said to Jonathan Brown when he asked me that exact same question on Fox Footy Live last night, I think in the end, it's not going to impact really how the season starts. I think it just impacts the reputation of the Adelaide Crows and in some ways the reputation of the AFL, because what happens now if another club comes and breaches the rules in the same way? Do they come down harder? They can't come down harder. Then they're made to look weak. They have to be stronger here. And I'm not saying you ban the players at all, really. I'm just saying maybe a small fine and then a hefty fine for the club would have sufficed. But in the end, they've sort of made Ben Hart the scapegoat, which is semi-understandable. But to not punish the club for poor administration, poor communication, poor operations, I think was an opportunity missed. And the Adelaide Crows continue to make errors in the background. This is not an error of a player missing a target, or this is not an error of a team losing by 100 points. This is an error from an administration perspective that has happened all too often at this club for a number of years.
Okay, so you think this is so you. There's sort of been a wide variety of opinions about whether we, in this situation, should link what's happened in the past with the Crows and those issues. Some, though, think that this is just an inadvertent mistake from all perspectives and really shouldn't be linked.
Yeah, but in each case, the Adelaide training camp, Tyson Stengel and the way they handle that drink driving and this, they're all completely separate situations. But under the one banner of Adelaide Football Club. And it has to be deeply cultural that something just isn't quite right. I'm not suggesting for one second that the way the training camp was handled was exactly the same as the way the Tyson Stengel situation was handled, but there's a lack of transparency. There's clearly a lack of operational nous in some sections of that football club. And they've got a new coach and that's really well-rated. Matthew Nix is hugely popular around the place. Adam Kelly's a really well-liked head of footy. He's just started in his role. But the chairman's still the same. The CEO is still the same. Yep. The GM of media is still the same. And you just wonder whether these things are, how long these things have to continue to happen before they decide they need to make changes.
So there's Andrew Fagan has been the constant throughout the past couple of years, really. And you've constantly come back to the operations side of things and issues being from an operation perspective. Some have called for Fagan potentially to step aside. Some have said that he needs to ask some tough questions, or the board needs to ask some tough questions of Fagan. Where does he sort of sit in this in the whole picture at the moment?
Yeah, well, I don't know the inner workings intricately enough to say he should be sacked. Absolutely not. But I think the board should be asking hard questions. I also think that they should reevaluate whether they did the right thing here in sending 16 players and a coach and a dietitian to a remote location in the Barossa Valley to isolate when their crosstown rivals, Port Adelaide, sent players to their homes because they wanted to be with their families. I mean, I'm not sure the benefit, especially in times where the soft cap is so tight, of actually sending players to the Barossa Valley in a big sort of resort. I'm yet to be convinced that was the right thing to do in the first place at all. And that, again, is not a transparency thing. That's just an operational thing. That's just I think it's going to end up being a poor decision that's been made. And I wonder what players thought when they're coming back from interstate, especially players with families and stuff in Adelaide, and they're coming back from Victoria or Western Australia, and they want to go to their families. But yet the club's saying, no, you've got to go and isolate in a resort in the Barossa Valley with your teammates for 14 days. I'm not sure that's the right thing to do. And it's led to this, really, hasn't it? Port Adelaide are in exactly the same situation as Adelaide, but they've handled completely different. And who's got it right and who's got it wrong at this stage?
Well, what's going to be interesting when the season does get back up and running is if a player does slip up, and it kind of, there's almost a bit of a sense of inevitability. You heard sort of Nick Riewoldt on Fox Footy Live last night talking about that naturally there's players who are a little bit more naive than others and don't kind of get it all, even no matter what you think about that. They're all Australian citizens, but so yep. Some Australian citizens will stuff up and some players will stuff up and others won't. But from when we do get it back up and running, if a player does slip up, what's that punishment going to look like? Greg Swan, the Brisbane chief executive, last week on 3AW called for, quote, severe punishments, and severe being, you know, 10 games at least, really.
That's what David King said as well, yeah.
Yeah. Maxi, is that too much, or do we need to, as a footy community and the league, do we need to make a statement here if players or staff or anyone in the industry slips up badly?
No, I think if anyone makes a blatantly bad mistake and goes against all of the policies, not just the AFL, but of the governments of Australia, sport is being presented as an example of Australia reopening, of us getting back to normality. And if in that public eye, people are making mistakes, they're becoming bigger role models than sports players already are portrayed as. So, of course, they need to be punished hard. I wouldn't be against them being punished, suspended for the season if they make a mistake in that regard at all because of that.
What's your thoughts, Tom?
Yeah, I think it needs to be on a case-by-case basis. But what the AFL has done, it's made a rod for its own back. By the leniency of this punishment at the Adelaide Crows, they can't then be seen to elevate that if something of a similar nature occurs again. So you hope that players don't stuff up, but what we've learned is players do stuff up, and clubs stuff up as well. No one's completely flawless, but it's going to be a difficult situation if a similar thing happens again. A breach takes place. How does the AFL combat that?
And there's a difference between players, quote-unquote, inadvertently playing kick-to-kick for 10 minutes and a group of players having a house party and it coming out on TikTok, as we've seen. If that sort of thing happens, I think players need to be punished heavily.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, like anything, there's always a sliding scale of how significant your offence is. And then there's punishments associated with each level of that sliding scale. It's subjective. What I think is really bad might not be really bad to anyone else. You ask most Crows fans, they go, oh, yeah, this doesn't really matter. This is okay. But you ask fans of other clubs, they might say this is a terrible breach. This is a health risk. So I guess it's in the eye of the critic, so to speak.
Well, when the season does get back underway, I think we're all looking forward to that day, no matter when it comes. But I suppose in recent times, there has been some questions around whether the 2020 season will have an asterisk on it, no matter what happens in terms of the premiership or success or whatever. Maxi, you've kind of half looked into this a little bit in the past couple of weeks. Will this season have an asterisk next to it?
Yeah, I had a look at this because as a baseball fan, this is something I've seen a lot of with Barry Bonds' quest for the home run record back in the late 90s, early 2000s. There was a lot of questions around, well, if you're cheating, does your record actually count? This isn't the same thing, but it's the asterisk question again. And I look back at what seasons we've had and how weird footy seasons have been. And the weirdest one is 1916, right? So 1916, middle of World War One, the Wooden Spooner won the premiership. Because there were four teams and Fitzroy finished last. I think they won two games for the home and away season. And then every team made the 14 finals and Fitzroy suddenly just won the flag. We count that flag. South Melbourne too. South Melbourne won the flag in 1918. They count that. You know, in 2018, Sydney wore a jumper that was celebrating their 1918 VFL premiership, even though that league was a different length, I think, and it was certainly a different number of teams. So we've had changes all the time, and as time goes forward, we forget about these issues and we just say, well, it was still a footy season, so we still count it. So I don't think you have any issues with an asterisk in that regard.
Yeah, I tend to agree as well. When we look back on 2020, in 20 to 30 years' time, I don't think we'll batter an eyelid too much that if, for instance, Richmond does win a third flag in four seasons, I don't think we'll batter an eyelid to say that, you know, that has, you know, that didn't quite feel right. I had an asterisk next to it.
Why would people think it? I just don't understand why people would think it would. You're still playing 17 home and away games. If anything, it's more equal than previous seasons. And
just
still
because it's different. Purely because it's different.
I think it's sort of a narrative that's fed on itself without any real basis. And for exactly the reasons you just said, there's been seasons that have had far more interruptions than this one in terms of world events and how many teams have been involved in the VFL or AFL season. You know, we're playing everyone once. This is this season is a more equal season than previous years.
What happens to it? Do we, in a couple of weeks' time, do we redo our season predictions? Like, is what changes from what was written about and spoken about in February, March compared to what we mean in June?
I don't think it's possible to predict how this helps certain teams and how it hurts others. I'm sure it will. And it's possible at the end of the season, because the year is slightly shorter and because particularly for West Coast and Freo, West Coast is going to be the one most impacted by this if they have to play more games on the East Coast than they otherwise would. So if they finish ninth and they don't get into the finals, you could probably make a case that they should have at least been in the finals mix. But in so many ways, there are going to be so many variables, it's impossible to predict. And that's what's going to make this season really fun, I hope, is there's so much unpredictability, so many differences, that it won't just be a Richmond procession as the end of last season was.
I think the only way you can potentially change it is by just looking at the round one form, but that's only one game anyway. So if on that, you'd say the Bulldogs are going to really struggle, but I still think the Dogs are going to be quite good. Hawthorn beat Brisbane. Feels so long ago. In the end, the game's still going to be the same. 16 and a half minute quarters. You might have bigger benches, which I think would be good for the game and allow players to back up quicker between matches, 4 or 5 day breaks, which I think is good. There's going to be some real heartache from the coronavirus and the impacts of COVID-19 on the industry. But I also think there's going to be some great positives to come out of the situation to actually make football better. But it won't be by design. It'll be by luck and chance, the fact that this illness has come along. But I think the AFL industry in the end will prosper because of the COVID-19 crisis. That might be 4 or 5, 10 years away, but I think we'll learn a lot of lessons about what we've been doing wrong in this time.
I hope things stay the same. I got 8 out of 9 tips in round 1.
Just before we wrap up, there's a bit from a local footy perspective as well. Whether a season will get up and running in 2020 seems a little bit more doubtful now that it was, you know, all local competitions and state leagues and under 18 footy was put off until May 31. Competitions around the country certainly won't be getting going in June from a local perspective. Where does this leave local footy, Tommy, from 2020?
Well, not all local footy is the same, because there's plenty of leagues that require that are funded effectively by gate receipts, by people paying to come in, by the bars and the canteens and so forth. Whereas there's also other local leagues. I'm part of the Victorian Amateur Football Association, the VAFA, which is not funded by that you can go and watch for free unless they're finals. And it relies on volunteers on a bigger basis. But I still think that they will find a way to get some sort of season away. If the AFL season starts June 11 or June 18, I'd find it hard to believe that local footy can't start in some form sort of by early to mid-July and you play everyone once, which might only be 8 or 9 games in a final series. It's just such a huge task to come back from that people have already paid subs. There's so many different ramifications if you don't have any local footy at all this year. And I can't imagine a situation where we're back playing footy at the AFL level in a month or a month yesterday, and then you don't play local footy at all. I think they'll probably find a way, but it takes a lot of work from AFL Victoria to do so,
yeah.
And also the country leagues and everywhere around Australia. As for the level up VFL state leagues, that's a lot more precarious because that costs a lot more money to run, and I think that's in grave danger of not happening at all.
And just from a draft perspective as well, like the elite under 18 competitions around the country not getting a full run at it, and it's probably the first time basically forever since the draft has been around in the AFL system, that the best underage kids in the country are not having a full proper run compared to the predecessors. So how the draft plays out, is talk that the draft might even happen around late December, around the Christmas stage, which would be absolutely fascinating. But you got to feel, I really feel, in fact, for the guys who want to make an AFL career their profession and they just don't have that full run of it. No one can do anything about it. It's just the situation that they're in, but really do feel for those guys.
Yeah.
Everything sucked for your 12s.
Yeah, it would. It's unfortunate, but you've got to control when you can. You literally have no control over it. So you just have to do the best job you can while you can. Easy for us to say. We're not trying to get drafted at the moment. Although, Max, I'd back you on a forward flank if you had a couple of months to get in shape.
But a lot of AFL Evolution 2 practices.
It's another whole topic altogether. Yeah. I think in the end, it's going to separate the best recruiters from the rest. That might only be a good thing. Again, the whole industry has to – what's that word that Gil McLaughlin has to keep saying? Agile. We have to be agile. So the recruiters and the list managers have to be really flexible in the way they go about rebuilding their list. It's so important. I don't think the draft age is going to be raised. Although, on Alistair Clarkson's subcommittee is now Damien Hardwick, who's an advocate for a draft age of 20. Luke Beveridge, I think, is 19. And at the moment, Gil McLaughlin has sort of said, well, they'll keep it at 18. It's worth a debate, and I don't mind the idea, but I'm yet to hear a fully-fledged argument that convinces me the draft age should be raised.
It's quite remarkable in this time that the three of us have had together how many stories we've touched on and haven't touched on, and how the footy news cycle, despite no games being on, has continued to roll on throughout the past couple of months. It is, you sort of sit back and think, this is quite an incredible beast that we're privileged to be part of.
Yeah, there's a... What was it, Max? There was a story. It was starting to get a bit flat. There wasn't a lot of things to talk about. Then the Lockie Hunter thing broke. And then, not always a good stories, I'm saying. Like, these are just the stories you talk about. They're big stories. Lockie Hunter and then Dean Laidley. Then you had a bit of AFL commission stuff. Then you had the Adelaide Crows. And the AFL industry has got this amazing ability to feed itself from scraps. There's nothing to eat, but continually just fattens itself up. And that's exactly what's been happening. So no wonder when footy comes back, we'll all be gluttonous. It'll be awesome because there'll be so many things to talk about.
Yeah, I think if people already get a little bit tired of footy and maybe they dip a little bit in the middle of the season, think how they're going to feel this year when we're going till October, November, trade period in November, draft in December. Are we going to get a break, Ben? Are we going to get to have time off this year? Or
probably not. If we get the season over by October, I'm sure we'll be able to fit in some leave in there. But at this point, we are very lucky to still be, you know, in the industry, because there's a lot of people in the industry that don't have jobs. There's a lot of people around the country and around the world that don't have jobs. So all our thoughts are with those who are doing it tough right now. Stay safe, and as these restrictions are lifted, be close to those who you love. And I'm sure we'll all get through this together, like we have done in this very, very special edition of the Fox Footy podcast. And make sure you keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.